So, happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you. I'm not celebrating myself.
No, nor am I.
No. Well, it's a bit to our listeners overseas.
Yes, exactly.
It's Thanksgiving as we're recording this. And do you know the story behind Thanksgiving, by the way?
No, not really.
Well, I think, and no doubt they will correct me if I'm wrong, it sort of dates back to the 17th century when the first Thanksgiving was prompted by a good harvest for the pilgrims who'd landed, you know, in America, looking for Disneyland on an early package thing.
Holiday.
Yeah, they were a bit disappointed to find they're going to have to wait 300 years before it was built. But, you know, the pilgrims celebrated Thanksgiving with the local tribe, the Wampanoags, I believe, a tribe of Native Americans who helped them survive, basically, you know, and so they were very thankful. I don't know if the Wampanoags call it Thanksgiving or whether they call it we should have got rid of them at that point. Day.
Yeah, they probably do. It's not quite as catchy as Thanksgiving.
No. they probably call it, well, that was a bit of a mistake helping those lot. Day.
Yes. Well, if there are any of them, what's the name of the tribe?
I think it's the Wampanoags.
Yeah. Okay. Well, much love to you. Well done.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 310 of the Midfaith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page, and I forgot your name there for a moment. And there's Joe Davis.
It was going so well. I was going to say, oh, you can do it all right when there's no consequence here. There's no Flamey Grant interview coming.
No.
But you didn't do it all right. So you were, in fact, brand consistent.
Like Thanksgiving, it's traditional now, isn't it?
Sort of, yeah.
We celebrate each podcast by me not bothering. Really?
Yes.
So I think, in fact, before the how are yous, we've got some church notices.
Do you know, I've got three church notices this week. It's like the bus, isn't it? You don't have any, and then they all come at once.
You're like a proper church secretary, you are.
Thank you. I knew I fitted the church somewhere.
Yeah.
So, well, look, first and foremost, we've got a guest. We got a guest to come and do a notice as well. So that's good. We'll come to that in a minute. Firstly, I'd like to direct your attention to this book that I'm holding up to Nick. This is Christmas, Tradition, Truth and Total Baubles by a certain Nick Page. A fabulous book. And it just occurred to me that some people who've joined us over the last year may, in fact, not have heard of it. So this is a fabulous book. Look, I particularly liked this right at the beginning. Fake good news to all men. Which I underlined because I enjoyed it so much. There you are, exploring the fake good news, of course, in your inimitable style, if I may say so. If you want to laugh and you want a great book that demythologizes, how would I say that if I was to be a normal?
Demythologizes.
Thank you. All the stuff around Christmas and gives you some great content, in fact, for a change from us. Then I highly recommend that is the only stocking filler you need really think about this year. Next year, however, on Saturday, the 18th of January, the fabulous Alison Mayall is coming to town to do an Enneagram 4 day. Now, as we all know, Enneagram 4s are the most special of all Enneagram types.
Suddenly I'm interested
in
something you're talking about.
So just put the date in the diary if you're an Enneagram 4 or know an Enneagram 4 and want to understand them more nearly and love them more dearly. That would be great. It's going to be at my house in Worthing, so in the south of England.
Oh, okay.
And you could try and look a bit more enthusiastic.
Well, I was thinking of coming because obviously it's a day where I get to talk about my favourite subject, i.e. me. Yeah. But if it's at your house, I think, oh, really? You know.
As ever, I'm moved by your love and care. And, we've got a guest coming for the last notice, so roll on the guest. Well, this is exciting. We've got a guest for the church notices, and that's a first. Hey, everyone, it's Brian Draper. Hey, Brian, welcome back. And, of course, we've got you on here to talk about the fabulous Advent series that you do. For those people who don't know, what's this Advent series all about?
Well, it's a series of reflections that I do through Advent. I suppose the difference from the other ones you could sign up to in Advent is that I write them in the moment, day to day. So they stay fresh and open, and with participants' responses as well, we kind of begin to shape a bit of a journey together. So that's what I love. It's about going on a journey together.
Yeah, I love that. Does that not panic you that it's not all written up already?
Completely. It's like standing at the bottom of a mountain as we start Advent. But no, it's an absolutely wonderful adventure, and it just forces me to stay absolutely open. I mean, sometimes you wonder whether it's not easy to write Christmas reflections in June, is it, when you're sitting by the swimming pool? And actually, as Advent comes in, looking out the you look out the window, and the beautiful sunsets, the pinks and the blues, and something is in the air, and you just think, now's the time, and you take it day by day.
Well, one of the things I love is that you often making nature references and quoting amazing people on nature, and obviously I love that with the nature churching stream going on. But the other thing I like, and I want this is one reason I'd really like to commend this to all our listeners, is that you don't make big demands of people. I've done some Advent stuff and some stuff around Lent and Easter. And day one is make a fully automated nativity scene, and day two is write a book, and day three, it's so overwhelming. I can't deal with it. I
Throw some
didn't sign up for
origami in
this.
there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And
Yeah,
what I love
no,
about
no.
yours are they're just thoughts to take into the day, and sometimes you will mention something very achievable and practical that isn't,
Yeah.
write an
Well,
entire series on Advent.
thank you. I appreciate that. So I always hope and pray that my work lifts a burden and doesn't add to the burdens, and at such a busy time as Advent,
Exactly.
it's got to be about lifting a burden, opening up a space, but not just any old space, a beautiful, exquisite, creative space. And then for me, as a contemplative Christian, it becomes about experience. I think someone once said that an ounce of experience is worth far more than a ton of theory. And I really subscribe to that. So it is about maybe one very small practical thing that you can do as part of the course of your day that helps to transform it for you, and maybe then outwardly for those around you as well. I think there's so much pain out there at the moment, isn't there? And there's so much kind of angst in the air and all of that. So I also want this, always want my seasons, but this in particular, this series in particular, to meet people within the reality of where they are, but also to look for the beauty and the joy that can be found within even those, the many difficult circumstances that people are finding. And the
Wonderful.
lovely thing is that this community of people that gathers, we have, so you can engage just on the level you want, just by reading a reflection that will only take 2 or 3 minutes to read each day, but will take you deep. But then we have once a week, we have a YouTube gathering, and you can respond creatively if you want. And there's sometimes some extra, so you can really get immersed. But what seems to happen is that you get some encouragement from each other, and you get to share a little bit of each other's journey and draw some strength from that. And for me, that is incredibly precious.
It's wonderful. Okay, well, listen, Brian, thank you so much. It's only a notice slot. It's not a full-blown interview. So listen, if people want to sign up, how and where do they do that?
Well, the simplest thing is to go to my website, which is briandraper.org, and just on the landing page there's a link to a sign up page, and it will take you 1 minute.
BrianDraper.org.
briandraper.org. And just to say, by the way, I invite a small donation, and details are on there, but you can pay what you like or nothing at all. It is just the crucial thing is take them if you want them.
Ah, that's absolutely fabulous. Brian, we wish you all the best. We look forward to the first one, which will come out when? What day does that
Okay, so
begin?
Monday the 2nd. I'm doing it for 3 weeks, from Monday the 2nd on weekdays through to Friday the 20th. So 3 clean weeks of
Wonderful.
weekly live emails.
That's so great. And if I don't see you before, I wish you and your family a very happy Christmas, mate. Thank you
Oh,
so
and
much.
also to you. Thank you so much for all you do.
Cheers, buddy.
Well, that was nice.
I know. He's a lovely man.
Yes, well, that's Bayern and his Advent series.
And sign up today, folks, because, it's starting on Monday the 2nd of
Oh,
December.
gosh. Yeah, it's worryingly near now, isn't it? Yeah.
I know, it's nearly Christmas. Where did that year go, eh?
Oh, I know. I know. Well, you're getting older, you see, so time appears to go faster. That's the thing.
Yes, that is certainly happening.
Now we've
Yes.
both hit our 40s. It's
Yes,
affecting
exactly.
us.
And our memories are going a bit.
So, anyway, how are you?
Well, I still got a cold. I mean, I
Oh,
deserve
no.
sympathy for that, don't I, really?
Oh, I'm so
But
sorry.
no, life's chugging along. I'm just battling that whole thing. You must do this. How do you stop yourself getting depressed by the news? COP29 came and went, and you just thought, well, that's not really gone very well, has it? We're not really reaching any of our targets, and there seems to be no willing to do anything about the greatest crisis to ever hit us as humanity. So, just trying to stay joyful and positive, recognizing that it's doomsday, really.
Well, I mean, I cope with it by not looking at the news.
Yeah, that's the mistake I made. Sorry.
Although I did look up something the other day, which I can talk about later, which made me very angry. So I just avoid it, really.
Well, listen, one of our 17 listeners is really a bit of a climate scientist expert in some respects. So you know who you are if you're listening. And I'd quite like to get her on the podcast sometime. So maybe a little interview sometime. Could ask her how she deals with it. Yeah.
It's cryptic, but
Yeah,
anyway.
I know. I know. So that's enough about me. It's all about you. Enneagram 4, Nick Page. Tell us
Thank
about
you.
yourself.
Well, as the special one, allow me to tell you about my life. What's really well, Storm Bert.
Oh,
So Storm
yes.
Bert came.
Oh, yes. That must have been triggering for you.
Do you know, genuinely it was,
Was
because I
it?
had to go on Sunday night to pick up my daughter from the station, and the road in towards the station
Oh,
for
no.
a quite a long time was quite deeply flooded. And not only
Oh,
deeply flooded, it
no.
was a sewer burst. You could smell it. So I prayed a lot during that
Yeah,
moment.
bet you
And
did.
so, like all our theories went out the window at that point, I tell you. I was praying like that. But it was all right. But generally it's been quite a lot of flooding around here, so we've been a bit hemmed in. But otherwise okay. And then I've just been to a graduation, literally just been to a graduation.
Ah, well done. Who of?
Oh, and my daughter Martha in Edinburgh. I mean, when I say been, I watched it live streamed.
Oh, there you go. From the comfort of your own home.
Yes, because I feel I've given enough to this family. And
It's funny, they say the same. Too much, in fact.
There were various reasons we couldn't go up there. So her sister went up with her, and they're having a good time. And that was lovely to see her graduating.
Yeah,
And that's a
excellent.
good thing, isn't it? That's one of the good things out of COVID. It's that, live streaming and things like that, and being able to see events that
Yeah, indeed.
you're distant from. That's really
That
nice.
is a good thing.
So that's
Well
nice.
done, Martha.
Yes,
Yeah.
she did very well.
Yeah.
Very proud of her, really. Anyway. But there we go. So that's me. I think we should get on. We've got a bit of feedback. We've got stuff to talk about.
Let's rock on. So, firstly, to Tab, who wrote in a shout out to her, and she sent a lovely but not a particularly pithy email, appreciating the interview with Flamey and sharing a bit of a story of her family. So, hi, Tab, and hope to meet up with them in the new year because they're local.
Does she know she'll have to pay for breakfast for you? Does she know that's
I
how it
haven't
works?
shared that kind of detail yet. It's early on in the relationship.
Tab, you are going to have to pick up the tab, in fact, the eponymous tab. I'm just warning you, this is how he
Well,
operates.
I love it if this is how it works. It does, certainly has seemed to be working that way. Okay. You don't have to tap. Kay says, "Hi, Joe. I'm subjecting myself to the back catalogue
Oh,
and enjoy,
gosh.
yeah, I know, enjoying the section in the 90s about death and grief. However, in approximately episode 94, the possible venture of an MFC version of A Christmas Carol is mooted. says, I guess you were thinking like the Muppets, but funnier. Anyhow, I don't think this particular idea has yet borne fruit. With Advent around the corner, you may need to move fast for this year, but I think it's time. Bar Humbug himself will gladly sort out the scripting, and I'm sure you'll be able to put on a range of voices to make it a two-person radio play version. Good luck, Kay. I don't remember that, do you?
Well, a few things here, Kay. Firstly, let me say there is nothing funnier than the Muppet Christmas Carol.
No, exactly. So, that's what struck me.
Secondly, the term Bar Humbug himself. I wonder who you're talking about there.
I got that reference.
I don't know which of us you're referring to. And thirdly, I literally have no memory of this. Do you have any memory of it at all?
I don't remember saying that. It doesn't sound like us, does it?
Well, it sounds like something you might announce that we were doing.
What, like a home group?
Yeah, you know, it sounds like you suddenly sort of suggest it on air, as it were, but I don't recall it. Isn't that funny? Yeah, no memory of it.
Do you know, we've nearly had 17 responses to the home group. It's very popular with the
good
17.
Good Lord, it's 100%.
Very 100% take up, I think so. Cheryl wrote in and says, hi, Joe. A recent episode discussed choosing joy and gave the example of listening to Radio 3 rather than the news. That was you, wasn't it?
It was me, yes.
Yeah, he said, we've had a couple of really tough months since my mother died suddenly and I found I could no longer listen to Radio 4 to and from work. Instead, I listened to Radio 2 with Zoe Ball in the morning and Sarah Cox in the early evening. It has been lovely to listen to music again and both these women have been so uplifting to listen to. I'm easily moved to tears at the moment. So this week's following of Paddy McGuinness riding his chopper bike 300 miles for children in need has regularly made me well up. It's easy to become cynical about celebrities and charity, but I am choosing joy at the moment and celebrating their achievements and the money they've helped raise. He says, thank you for all the podcasts. We listen on a Sunday morning and then have a walk to discuss it. It's a new way of doing church, which is very relaxing. I said, at times I miss being part of a church community in the way we used to, probably more than my husband does, but your podcast helps me still feel part of one. Much love to you and Nick, and that's from Cheryl. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. And of course, that ties in what we were talking about earlier in terms of the news and listening to it. And I think it's a question of balance. I think you do have to be careful what media diet you're on.
Yes.
Really. Yeah. And the fact is, if your sort of capacity for stress is and anxiety is already full.
Yeah, like you're grieving, for example.
Precisely.
Yeah.
You deserve a break.
Yes.
And so some people, when I say, for example, I don't really listen to the news or pay much attention to it at the moment, they look at me as though I've sort of opted out of society. And I absolutely haven't. It's just that I'm consuming it in a different way. I don't need to sort of gobble it up as I used to, really, and to snack on it. So I think you have to be very careful what you take in. And I think that's very wise. Listen to music. Have joy.
Yeah, exactly. And listen to great people like Zoe Ball and Sarah Cox. Why not? They are fabulous DJs. And also just choosing not to go with cynicism and seeing the great things about humanity. Humans are brilliant. They're amazing. And they do wonderful things. And I think the news masks all that stuff with depressing stuff. So well done to you, Cheryl. Thank you. And there's so much one could say, but I think that's probably enough now because I want to read to you from Becky. She says, hi, Joe and Nick. Just listened to your latest episode on prayer and wanted to share something which was quite revolutionary for me. For a long time now, I've been battling with how prayer works or indeed why we pray and not really found any answers. I can relate to some of your listeners about trying to untangle the process of praying for protection and asking God to intervene. It's never sat well with me because there are always others that are greatly suffering where God appears to be silent. And I also knew that wasn't right too. And so she then quotes from a podcast that she was listening to from James Finley. And in that podcast, he talked very dramatically about little girls who are going to be abused. And he said, and no one's going to stop it. It's going to happen tonight. And he said, there are little boys who are going to be beaten again at the edge of their life. No one's going to stop it because it went on and on and on. And God didn't stop it. And he says, whatever it means that God helps us, it doesn't mean that God stops the cruel semester of the cross, really. God depends on us with God's help to set the boundary to make it safe. So that's why I say God is a presence that protects us from nothing, even as God unexplainably sustains us in all things. But what God does is incarnates that love in getting a realistic position, like, what can I do about this? What can I do? Where can I go for help? So, yeah, so Becky offered this section from the podcast to us as kind of, she found it helpful. What do we make of that? James Finley described some of his abuse earlier in the podcast, the awful, terrible childhood trauma that he'd suffered. So, yeah, what do you make of that?
So, as I understand it, I think what he's saying there is that, you know, it's up to us. In a sense, we have to be the prayers. We have to be the answer.
Yeah,
to prayers. Yeah. Things are going to happen that we don't want to happen. God isn't necessarily going to step in. Yeah. But there's that line, God, what's it? God depends on us with God's help to set the boundary to make it safe.
I like that.
Mm. Yeah, I think I wouldn't be quite as, you know, one-sided as saying God doesn't protect us from anything. I don't know about that. It's impossible to say because you don't know what he or what she has protected you from because you haven't experienced it. But I think that it's a very realistic proposition in the sense that it's saying, look, this stuff happens. And you know, it's a bit what I was dealing with earlier. You know, there is bad stuff on the news. There is bad stuff everywhere. It's going to happen. And the question is, how do we respond to it? How do we become a kind of prayer ourselves?
Yeah, I think that's so helpful. And this is something for another podcast, another occasion. But I want to explore some of these toxic things that Christians say to make themselves feel better. Like, God never gives you anything you can't handle or you can't. Yeah. You know, I mean, really? Really? I don't think that's true at all. And I think sometimes you've just got to call these things out, haven't you, really? But again, we've talked a lot recently about partnership with the divine. And I think this is alluding to that yet again. It's not that God does something, you know, from out there somewhere miraculously. No, God is using us to be God in a situation. Mm. And I think that's an awesome responsibility and privilege and all the other things, really. So
yeah, I think that's right. And I think sometimes that calibrating that response or working out what that response should be is very hard, isn't it? Because we were talking about the news earlier, so let me talk something about something that happened to me earlier in the week. I couldn't sleep. I was awake at 5 o'clock in the morning, right, which, as you know, for me would be quite remarkable, really.
It is incredible.
And I suddenly realized that the Archbishop of Canterbury had resigned. And I didn't really know anything about it. And I felt perhaps I should look into that one a bit. And find out. And so I read all the stories, and some people will be familiar with the thing. It's basically an abuse case from the really sort of 70s and 80s, about which he and many others really didn't do enough.
Yeah.
They knew about it. It was known. There was a report back in the 80s, and then another report much more recently. But they didn't really do anything. Yeah. Or didn't do enough.
They didn't do enough, I think, is the issue.
And so I don't really want to talk about them as such, you know, because I think in terms of leadership, I feel a little bit but for the grace of God, you know, I don't know how I would have managed that, or, you know, what errors I'd make. But I think what really wound me up about it, what really got me about it, because I read the whole report. I think it's called the Making Report.
Oh, gosh.
And it's really awful.
You really do go into things, don't you? I mean, you read the whole report.
Well, you know, you want to know what the fuss is about, that kind of thing. But I think it was the systems that got me so wound up about it. And when we are talking about being the answer to prayer, one of the things I think we have to do is to be prepared to challenge the systems, and that's very hard.
Yeah.
Because it's the way of, you could almost see the way of thinking that led up to this. And it is some of those phrases you talked about. Because one of the reasons they didn't really deal with it is because they were living in a mindset that thought prayer would sort it out. Prayer is enough. You know, they thought if they prayed enough about it, there'd come a solution to it.
Yeah.
And of course, sometimes prayer is all you can do in some situations. But I think much more often there are other things that you can and should be doing. And what they should have been doing, you know, prayer prayer was one side of it. Maybe the police was the other side. You know, yes, maybe there was that.
Exactly.
You know?
Well, not either or, is it? It's definitely both in those circumstances.
But you can see how that theological mindset, coming from that field of God, you know, being in charge of everything and answering everything, they genuinely thought that God would provide this answer, this way out. And secondly, there was this whole sort of strategy about it that I found really disturbing, because it happened at these camps.
Yeah.
I think they were called the Iwern camps. And the rationale behind these camps was to hand pick boys from the best public schools. The guy who set it up, who seems to have been a genuine, you know, good guy, known as Bash something, I can't remember his name. His mantra was the best boys from the best schools. And so the idea was, you get these boys, you train them up in a certain way of, you know, Christian understanding. It can, in this case, conservative evangelicalism, but it could have been any other. And they'll go on to shape society, because they're from Eton, they're from Winchester, they're going to do this. And I just thought, well, of course that's going to turn into some kind of cult-like behaviour. Because you're telling these people that they're the special ones. They're the elite. Yeah. They're not only the elite, they're the elect.
Yeah, but they're taking that from Jesus, because didn't he go around all the public schools and say, I want the best of the best in my team, don't you? Don't you try and fob me off with some nobodies. No.
No fishermen.
Give
please.
Me your most academic A-star students to work with.
Well, you know, there is an argument to say Jesus did handpick, but he certainly didn't do it in an elitist way. He did it in the least obvious way. So you know, there's this belief that you can somehow strategize the kingdom in that way.
Yeah.
That you can take a managerial sort of strategic thing to it. And you know, the fact is, all these boys came from boarding schools, you know, and they all came from sort of where they're already psychologically sort of damaged in so many ways, you know. And so there was this system set up that along this strategy that was so, to me, sort of not like the gospel. I just couldn't see it. And then the third thing was that when it did happen and when they knew about it, they wanted to cover it up because they thought it would it would damage what had happened. It would damage the good things. It would damage the somebody said, one of the guys who really covered it, he said this: I thought it would do the work of God immense damage if this were public. And when I read that, I thought, what the is the work of God?
Do you know what? I can feel you getting steamed up.
What do you mean by that? What is the work of God? Is the work of God just to prepare people to get into heaven? Is that what it is? And so whatever hell they're living in of abuse and mistreatment down here, that doesn't matter, because they're getting all the rest of the boys are getting into heaven. You know, is that the work of God? Or is the work of God to bind up the brokenhearted and to bring comfort to those who grieve and mourn and to release the captives and to free the oppressed and to give sight back to the blind? And to where's the work of God here? What is the work of God?
Yeah. Yeah, totally divorced from any sense of reality, clearly.
You know, in all this, there were victims here.
Yeah.
There were people who suffered terribly, and there were suicide attempts, and there was a person who lost their life because the abuse carried on in Africa after the guy left the UK. So what is the work of God there except to seek forgiveness? And to seek reparation and to represent those poor people. That's the work of God. This is what happens, I think, when you see the work of God as just synonymous with getting people into heaven. Because it doesn't then matter what happens to them on earth. You know, it's seen as a trivial thing compared to that.
And if there's a new heaven and a new earth, we haven't even got to care about this earth either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose sight of the victims, because what happened here was terrible and grotesque and horrific.
Yeah.
But for all that, what I'm talking about here is it's not the sin. It's the system.
Yeah.
It's the systems that you build which make that kind of sin virtually inevitable.
Yes. And the theology that it's built upon, those systems.
Exactly.
Are built upon. Yeah.
Exactly that. If you have a theology of elect, then those people will think they're special.
Yeah.
And if you have a kind of theology of leadership that it's all about elitism and intellectual ability, and you know, and if it's about the focus on numbers the whole time, and because the people involved in this are all from some of the, you know, the mainstream big Anglican churches, you know, that they were part of that thing. They were the heroes of that kind of world. And yet they were all implicated to some degree or other in this cover-up. And I'm not maligning them, because, as I said, I don't know how I would act. But I'm thinking they are stuck in a mindset that makes this kind of behaviour almost inevitable.
Mm.
And so, you know, I for the first time, the reason I'm still a bit steamed up, but the first time I thought, oh, I could chuck in the Anglican Church if it's like this.
Well, it's really serious for you to say that. Yeah,
I could throw it in. Because... you know, even some of the responses to Archbishop Justin going, you can see that the sides are lining up about what kind of person they want in, and is this, you know, have they got rid of somebody they think is too liberal, and are they bringing somebody else in, or that, you know, there's battle lines already being drawn up, and you're thinking, once again, the system is here that is going to make this kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Happen.
Let's just look for the most Christ-like person we can. How about they become Archbishop?
Be a nightmare, absolute disaster, wouldn't it? Give away all the money for one thing.
Exactly.
It'd be dreadful.
It's going to end in crucifixion. Yeah.
You know. So I felt that I'd gone back down the rabbit hole, but actually, I think it's been good for me to think through, because, you know, in all humility, I've got to make sure that I don't get sucked in. I could easily get sucked in. You know, I don't know if you've ever met. Yeah. Well, you know what it's like with meeting sort of powerful or influential people.
Yeah.
You know, you get a kind of glow around you. You think, I'm in, you know,
yeah.
When we worked with Steve, it was great. I could say to people, well, I work with Steve Chalk, you know, I'm on the leadership team. I work with, you know, and it's kind of like, I'm in an inner circle. And you can see, it didn't with Steve, obviously, but you can see how obviously that could go wrong.
Yeah.
And you become compromised with it. So I'm trying to think through, what do I do? And the answer is, well, you know, I carry on, I think, at a local level.
Yeah.
I carry on focusing on Jesus at a local level, and really pray for all these people involved, I think, and just try and not be part of that.
Yeah, exactly.
That approach, those kinds of systems, really. And I don't know how you would, you know, you've been in leadership, so you know the kind of difficulties and the complexities of this. It's easy for me, in a sense, to stand on the outside and go, well, you should have done this. But I mean, what's your view on it, really?
Like you, I mean, I'm bemused by the lack of adherence to what is the actual law, for a start. So you know, I've had the privilege of working, I guess, in churches that have had really hot, you know, protective systems. And you know, I certainly was involved with the police when someone came to me and, you know, I said, we are informing the police. Well, in fact, I didn't. I went to the child protection officer and we went to the police. And we enabled the person who was the victim to go to the police. And that we saw that unquestionably that was the first course of action, you know, so. And it's really difficult, and it was really scandalous, and it was very painful for those involved. But that is that's the law. It is actually the law. So we don't get to decide whether we should go to the police or not. That's not even a thing. But there are systems within the clerical world, and you know, I only know my world, which is the Baptist system, that designed, you know, I remember a particularly depressing report that came out when someone I knew was a minister. They were doing a report called Leaders Under Pressure for Spring Harvest. They wanted to research their batch from Spurgeon's. There were 10 of them. And, you know, 8 out of 10 of them, you know, their marriages had gone. Yeah. And then, you know, the 9th one went, and then the person who did the actual report ran off with someone else. It was very depressing for me, that. It's very depressing that my senior friend, who I went to talk about my marriage, you know, issues when I came out of Spurgeon, turned out they had a long-term affair for many, many years. And of course, I worked with so many people, and I got, I suppose, quite disillusioned with. There's something about the system of being a Baptist minister where you set your own diary and no one kind of knows where you are. That's all I've thought, that I think is probably inherently unhealthy. You know, you work on your own, you go visit people on your own, perhaps, you know, there's just potential for so much disaster in that system. There's a system that spiritualizes everything rather than offering practical marriage support to people in leadership. You know, they talk about prayer and are you praying together? Well, do you know what? That probably isn't the big issue. The big issue is, are you being faithful to each other for a start? Yes. Yeah, the big issue is, do you like each other still? Are you in love? If you're not in love, what do you want to do about that? You know, it's like, it's so obvious. There are so many things that are more important. And of course, becoming a minister, I had virtually no spiritual formation. So I was never asked when I was trained, you know, how are you treating your wife? What are your words like to your children? How do you, that was not as important as understanding the chiastic structure of some obscure passages in Isaiah. That's far more important.
Yeah. I can't believe you're saying that, really.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, it's a strange world, the theological training world. And, you know, I'm not pointing any fingers at anyone. I'm not judging anyone whose marriage is a breakdown, you know, just because I got lucky. No, I would never do that. But I do think the system is faulty. Hey, listen, this has been quite heavy, hasn't it? Sorry about that. Should I apologise?
No, I don't think you should, because no. It's my fault, apart from anything else. Yeah. But no, where can we find hope in it, I think? I think...
Yeah.
Because obviously this is a horrific story, and there are always these kinds of stories at one level or another. But I think for all that, we shouldn't forget that along with these terrible things, there were millions and millions of acts of kindness every day, and decency and compassion and forgiveness and love and just the basic Christ-like work of being a disciple.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so I think that's worth thinking. And I think secondly, look, the kingdom of God doesn't need our damage control. You know, history shows that there have always been people doing terrible things within the church, obviously, and yet somehow the kindness and Christ-likeness of Christians survives and carries on. So cherish those, I think, you know, and really look at those. And the other thing, I think, like I said, you know, what can we do? What can I do? How can we be help to people? How can we be the answer to prayer? How can we be that helpful moment in people's lives? And what can I do to challenge systems that actually are inherently, you know, unhelpful in this situation?
Yeah, exactly. And listen, just to finish things up, I do feel duty-bound to say, if any of our listeners are in an abusive relationship, it is wrong. Don't fall for any of that spiritual garbage that somehow it's okay. If someone is making you do anything that you don't want to do, it's just wrong. It is wrong, unless it's doing your homework or something like that. Then in which case, you should probably do your homework. But you get what I'm saying here. Friends, don't listen to that stuff that says God will never give you what you can't handle. You know, because that's not how the universe works. Well, I don't think so anyway.
No, I think you're right. And yeah, that's really important. Thanks for saying that. So thank you very much for listening. And thank you for sending in your emails. Always grateful to receive those. If you wish to email the podcast, please send your email to
joe@midfaithcrisis.org.
Excellent. Thank you to those who support the podcast. That's lovely. We really appreciate
that. We really do.
And we will be back with you next week. Maybe slightly cheerier. I don't know.
Yeah, let's try and do cheer. Let's try and do like Advent cheer.
Maybe I'll listen to a bit more joyful music.
So listen, we've talked a lot about prayer and being the answer to prayer and everything. So let's finish with a prayer for courage, if we can. So it goes like this. And thank you, Anonymous, for this prayer. Loving Creator, you have placed within me the spark of your light. A call to live with courage, compassion, and hope. Help me to see the world as you do, a tapestry of beauty and possibility. Let my words bring kindness, my actions bring justice, and my heart bring love. May I not wait for others to lead, but step forward with humility and grace. Shape me into an agent of peace, a reflection of the goodness I long to see. Amen.